The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome to the GAR Live. Okay. That was absolutely brilliant, but wait until I cue you here. Hang on a second. Welcome to the GAR Live in Cookstown. What a fantastic crowd. Much missed our second live show up in Ulster, and Donegal crowd were nothing on this crowd. This is... come to Tyrone more often.
The Tyrone crowd are always annoyingly loud.
They are. Right, we have a great show lined up. So panel one, we're going to talk about the Battle of Omagh. Battle of Omagh is basically when a Leinster team, the Dubs, came up and put a bit of manners on Tyrone in your own home ground, right? We all remember it that way.
The Ulster team were trying to play football. The Leinster team came up and brought that Eastern tactic.
Can you believe there was a time, long, long time ago, where Dublin couldn't win in All-Ireland, they came up and did some dirty shit up here, and Tyrone were the top dogs. And now it's all flipped around, right? So it's the complete opposite of that now. Right, so we're in Cookstown, like I mentioned, and we're previewing Tyrone-Dublin. Owen Mulligan is a guest, Paddy Power ambassador, a local hero. So it would be very rude not to talk about one of the greatest goals that was ever scored in Croke Park. 2005 set the scene. Dublin 3 points down. Piller thought he was home and hosed. They were playing really well. I think they robbed us in the Leinster final before that. But then Muggsy comes out of nowhere and does this. So it was such a work of art. I've broken it down into five scenes. Right. So we have scene one. And what I call in scene one is the diagonal ball by Stephen O'Neill, a catch on the half bounce under pressure, and then sending Paddy Christie for a Snickers. That's what this one's called, so we'll see this. So nice diagonal ball in there. Diagonal balls weren't a thing back then. Catch on the half bounce, very difficult to do. Not the fastest sidestep in the world, but Paddy Christie. You know, Paddy Christie. Right, you stop it there, Conan. There isn't really a goal on here.
Well, no, there's not. I can't imagine if Sean Murray Lockhart and Niall McCusker were here, he would even be thinking about goal.
Yeah, no, there's definitely not a goal on here. There's two defenders between him and the goal, maybe some more. They're 3 points down. Personally, I would have tapped it over, right, into the hill, you know. But anyway, Muggsy had other things on his mind. So the second scene, we call this solo with the left, which is only showing off because this is his weaker foot and there was no one on him. Feign a pass to nobody and get past Paul Griffin. Here's the dummy solo with the left. And there's absolutely no need to dummy with the left here. Like, the right is perfectly fine. We all know that showboating. So here we go. Dummy pass. Griffin's gone, right? So we'll stop it there, right? So then we get to scene three, right? So he's already thrown a dummy hand pass, right? There is no way that's going to work again. Absolutely no way. And then, bing! Paul Casey. Right, so we have Paul Casey, so Muggsy knows what to do. Okay, right, so we'll stop it there. So Paul Casey must have nightmares about that, seriously. Like, I mean, I know there was someone in his eye line, but like, last line defence. Anyways, terrible defending. So scene four is basically, I'm absolutely bollocks, so I'm just going to blast it. That's what this scene is called. Bang. So no eyes, Sean. So... this always goes well, and Stevie McDonald tells us on the podcast, Conan, that this thing of placing it is a load of nonsense. Like, 9 times out of 10, if you lash it, it might come slightly off the outside of your boot and it's sending the goalkeeper the wrong way, which I think it was a slice.
I think you're being very harsh on him
there. All right, then scene five to finish up. This is basically, I wasn't expecting any of that to work out, so I don't have a celebration plan to match the goal. Two fists, and then a kind of a weird high five. Yeah, that was it. I think that was Peter Canavan.
He must be raging enough to count on until the next week.
But this is what I think, and I'm going to ask Muggsy when he comes up in a minute. I think Muggsy stewed over that celebration all week and went, I can't do, like, that was terrible. And then does the Cantona the week after. So listen, we're going to find out. Listen, give it up for our first panel. Piller Caffrey, Barry Cal, and Paddy Power ambassador and local legend, Owen Mulligan. So Muggsy, is my theory right on that celebration?
I was pairing it. It was
but did you think about it all week and go, I might do something better next week? Didn't you do it?
No, I was telling the lads, I was coming off, I was going to be substituted. So I seen Marty Penrose running up. And I think Peter, I think, had a word with Mickey Hart because Canavan was coming on. So I said, I'm going to do something here. So I did that.
So actually a pint mightn't have been enough to save you. You had to do something.
No, I was getting the shepherd's hook. So, as I said, it opened up. But I didn't sell Paddy Christie, don't mean. He just fell.
He maybe clipped the heels, yeah. But you were kind of sharp on the turn. Paddy kind of went for you.
Never sharp in my life.
Right, well, the first panel here, lads, we want to talk about the Battle of Omagh, right? So this seems like light years ago when Dublin couldn't get over the line and wanted to lay down a marker with Tyrone. And now it seems every team is trying to do the same thing with Dublin. But Pillar, kind of outlined the background kind of leading up to this, because obviously that goal and that replay win was the year before this one.
Well, look, Tyrone were the top dogs, you know, the two All-Irelands under their Oxter at this stage. In 05, we felt we played very well for about 40 minutes of the game, the drawn game in Croke Park. We went in at half-time. There was a little bit of a scuffle just before half-time. I noticed there's no footage of that being shown. But my good friend, Mr. Gormley here, was observing it from a very close distance.
And Alan Brogan was on the ground.
And the hill were baying for blood. So we went into the ground convinced that the referee was going to come back out and show a red card to a Tyrone player. We were 5 points up at half-time, so we were in a good place. Now, Mickey Hart has performed a lot of miracles over the years. Pity he wasn't a bit fucking quicker and get your man off that day. So, our setup, we win at half-time, we go through what we did well in the first half, what we need to improve on in the second half, and we go through any adjustments positional-wise. So we go back out thinking we're facing the same Tyrone that we had faced in the first half. Tyrone, I think, made 6 positional changes start of the second half. So we were all over the place for a few minutes. Where am I going here? So that upset us and upset the balance. Tyrone worked their way back into the game. And look, it was one of the best atmospheres ever in terms of actual in there. 114 each. We ended up getting the last point to draw it and bring it to replay. So the replay... Again, we played very well for about 40 minutes. We went behind. We had a storm and comeback, but we just couldn't wheel them in. And again, your man struck a goal. Just to correct you, his first goal, the dummy one, that was into the canal end. The second one was into the Hill 16, right. So that's where he gave the old Canton a shite.
Just wouldn't have fit on the canal end, would it?
But look... Tyrone were an unbelievable team, and you know at that stage everybody was looking in, how are we going to beat them? They were at a different stage of their development in terms of us physically, and they had a few great enforcers. I would have loved to have them in my team. We didn't, but we had to try and change things. We had a very decent team, but there was an awful lot of nice guys in the Dublin team at that stage. Yeah. And as we all know, nice guys are great to go out and drink with. They're great to go out and socialise with. They're great to bring out your daughters.
Make great husbands, yeah.
maybe you don't win that many All-Irelands.
So obviously the hurt of that, and I didn't know about that incident in that game, Barry. So Tyrone go away and celebrate their All-Ireland, and they're out having the crack and bringing the cup around everywhere, while all the time you're back in training in November and December, and you're targeting this league game against Tyrone to get Tyrone back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was the first round of the National League, started 2006, so we probably would have been training maybe 7 or 8 weeks leading into it, and obviously Tyrone would have been celebrating their All-Ireland. They would have had their team holiday, enjoyed Christmas and everything like that, so they probably weren't targeting that game as much as we were. I think we won the Auburn Cup in January, so going into that game, definitely we wanted to lay down a marker. I think we had spoke after the replay that we maybe weren't as physical as we could have been, and that we maybe backed down a couple of times from different confrontation or shirked a couple of different things in terms of responsibility. So going into that game against Tyrone, first round of the league in Omagh, I think we did have a conversation in a couple of days leading up to it, saying that look, if anything kicks off here, like no one's gonna back down on it. You know, we spoke about it in the dressing room beforehand. I suppose little did we know it was gonna be Alan Brogan and their their physio that actually sparks the whole thing. But it was definitely a case, if there was going to be a row or anything, it was one in, all in, yeah, type mentality, which wouldn't normally be the case. But I think playing the All-Ireland champions in their home patch, you know, it was a big game for us.
Yeah. So you just floated into this league game, Muggsy, not really knowing that this storm was brewing in the other dressing room, or did you have an idea?
Pat says to me there, yeah, the boys enjoyed the holiday and Christmas. I certainly did. But,
you were moving fairly well in the fight, which we'll get to fit later on. There was no fitness.
There was a bit of, you know, turkey and ham belly there as well. So I remember it well because Rim Mulgrew was playing, a club mate of my own, and I was kind of trying to look after him as well. He was a young lad in the team, and he was, you know, he was getting a cut. I think he was singled out for maybe treatment as well. He was getting a couple of heavy hits, so I was going in there as well. But we had always the players to back it up too, the Gormleys, the Hubs, you know, fellas they got there, you know, they'd always stand by you, and we felt safe up front, you know, but if anything kicked off, we weren't backing down, we weren't taking a backward step either.
Yeah. It kind of started off in, before the match ever started, Pillar, with you not being allowed warm up somewhere. You warmed up in a car park, and then being the tick fucker that you are, you didn't give them a guard of honour then.
I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that.
Been that the guard of honour or nothing? That be the, we arrived, you see, in usual detail, you arrive an hour before the game and met the officials or whatever, and we asked where, you know, which end were we doing the warm-up on, and whatever official was there said, no, the pitch is barely playable, first match in the National League, we weren't allowed out on the pitch to do the warm-up. But Jeff Reardon's dressed him, he told us to go out to the car park and stretch. So next thing, somebody's looking out the window and said, Pillar, fucking Tyrone are out on the pitch fucking doing their work. So we went out and jumped the wire and went out onto the pitch. So it was a couple of stewards trying to stop the lads getting out onto the pitch or whatever. And so there's a little bit of tension before.
It was on already, yeah. This is on, yeah.
We didn't need much, but no. It fueled it.
So look, then, you know, normally there's a guard of honour, first round of the National League, teams out or whatever. I think it's bullshit anyway because, you know, they've won it, they were the best team, let's get on with the new year. But the players said, fuck that guard of honour, let's get the ball thrown in. That was fine. So the ball was thrown in and 4 minutes later it kicked off.
It kicked off already. Did you notice the guard of honour thing, Muggsy, no?
No, I definitely
really?
Didn't. I didn't know that happened. I didn't know that happened and I'm sorry.
Psychological warfare that Muggsy didn't even know happened. Right, well, we'll get into the row then, because you said it kicked off after 4 minutes, and we don't actually have footage of that. We have the fight starting on 40 minutes, which starts off with Alan Brogan. So he is a close fist on Kieran Gourley, who goes down, and Alan complains about him diving, which would be very unlike Tyrone lads around that time. Right, so here's the... We can roll that video. Yeah, so Alan's complaining about that, and then Wheeler tries to pull Gourley up, and I think it's Collie Holmes comes in. So then it's all kicking off. It's Dublin a little bit fired up. That was going to be Alan's second yellow, which he was going to get the line. But, like, I mean, Wheeler inflamed that pretty much Pillar at that stage, trying to pull Gourley up off the ground.
Guilty.
Yeah. Right, so we'll play the video on here and we see Alan Brogan getting sent off. And this is the most bizarre thing about it because Alan chases the doctor. And, and like I know Alan Brogan very, very well and I love him, but Alan's not that type of person. Like, this is out of character for Alan. So what did his doctor say to him?
Angriest he's ever been.
Yeah, I've never seen him like that, ever.
Just to be clear on it, Alan Brogan's a lover, not a fighter. Yeah. Right? Absolutely. One of the cleanest players that ever played with Dublin. I think your man asked them, how many All-Irelands have you?
That's all.
I'm not sure, but he said, can you hear the jingle in my pocket? How many All-Irelands have you got?
About the same as him. So that's it, folks. You see Alan kind of running after the doctor, and then, like, I mean, they're just kind of bizarre scenes.
The wee doc was a bit of a legend around Tyrone, you see.
Is he?
Yeah, he was Shimmy, you called him. And I seen this here and I said to myself, what is that man doing? Like, or what has been said? I don't think it was that, to be fair. I don't think it was. I think it was more Willow pulling. I think it was Gourley up, wasn't it?
Yeah, Gourley, yeah.
I don't know if that should happen. I don't think that should happen. if the man was injured, the man was injured, and you see it all the time, men pulling it up. I think that inflames a row, starts a row. So I think that was maybe it. But I know there's a few boys who's in here now protecting Dr. Seamus.
Yeah. I asked Alan what he said. He says, I can't remember. Bullshit.
Really,
yeah, I don't believe that.
He's probably saving it for his book or something.
Maybe he is. So anyways, right, so moving on from this. So basically, McGee, cornerback, Mickey McGee, he comes in and he grabs Alan, takes kind of, you know, has a serious problem with Alan talking to the doctor like that, and he kind of pushes him. The next minute, Kevin...
that was a fucking great hit.
Kevin Bonner comes in, and it's WWE stuff. It's off the side rope. And it's basically McGee... I don't think McGee did anything to deserve this. Yeah. There was no punches thrown, but Bonner...
He ran out of fair shoulder.
Slightly in the back pillar. So this really kicks it off, because before that, it's just pushing and shoving. Bonner comes in and absolutely takes McGee out of it. Like, I mean, he must have whiplash. His neck kind of completely bounced back. And you might see in the video when it plays on, Bonner hits him, knocks him onto the ground, and all in the same motion lands on his feet, turns around, and he's ready for anyone. He's ready for anyone that's coming with him. So basically, Katsura is on at this stage.
It is. I mean, Kev Bonner's a club mate of mine. I would have played with him growing up all through the years, and he probably has a bit of form because a couple of years earlier, Bridges played Parnell's in the Parnell Park, and he was a spectator, and he jumped the fence and did a bit of a kung fu kick.
Remember that? Yeah.
That caused another row, so he was just acting out again.
Yeah, okay, so it's not out of character. I remember that was against Parnell's, yeah?
It was a famous row,
yeah. Anyways, we'll play the video on here, and then all hell breaks loose, and Owen Mulligan gets involved. So we tried to track Muggsy's involvement in this. Pillar's pulling Brogan away. So Mulligan's getting in now, and he's reaching over the top. I'm not sure who he's going after. So basically, he gets locked in here, kind of at the back, and he goes one-on-one. We think it's Pat or Andrews or else Brian Cullen, I'm not sure. But it's a bit like that Philly McMahon, Michael Shields row. There's a lot of fists going, and it's hard to kind of determine the winner. Muggsy, fill us in.
You know yourself, when I went in to break it up. So I went in to try and break it up, and I was hit from behind. So in a row like that, as my dad used to say, you always get your back to the railings or back to the gate. So that's what I tried to do, but I was getting hit from the back. So you just swing and, you know, you're trying to protect yourself and trying to protect your county mates. And these boys are the same, you know. It kicked off and nobody was taking a backward step.
Yeah, no, and that's why it got so dangerous, Pillar, because it spilled over to both benches. That's sort of like, fights like that can get really dangerous when benches get involved.
If that fight was in the middle of the pitch, there would have been far less about it.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was right in front of the two benches and a packed stand, it led to it but escalating quite quickly.
See the way Oma was, the subs are up on the stand beside the supporters, and I don't think that's right. You know, the sub benches there, and that's why it went up. And I think those men chased up the steps and everything.
You know what I mean? Well, you had to... Well, actually, the video ends and Alan Brogan safely up in the stand after starting the whole thing.
the best view in the house.
Like, you made sure to get him out of harm's way straight away, Pillar.
Well, my top prize immediately... Right, this is kicked off now. There's going to be hell to pay further down the line. Brogy's already off. If he steps back and starts getting involved in a row, he'll get double suspension. So I'm saying, Brogy, get the fuck up the steps. Mm. Championship's only 3 months away. And you know, they throw a 3-month suspension at you. So I was minding me prize asset. Get up behind me, pal.
But that's the thing, though, because the subs are in the stand. When the subs clear down, then the people in the supporters try and get down involved. Do you know what I mean? It's probably adrenaline's running, but, like, I mean, you'd be well in your rights to feel a little bit concerned they're away from home.
Yeah, definitely. I think if the row just stayed in the middle of the pitch, as Pillar said, it would have just... the fuse after a couple of minutes, you know. But when it's that close to the ground, to the stand, I think there was a passionate enough crowd at the match anyway. You know, first round of the National League, we were obviously trying to lay down a marker. And, you know, when you get into the second half, supporters do get that bit more animated, and they probably didn't need much of an excuse just to kick off either. So, it was entertaining, to say the least.
We've got no footage of you in the fight, but we do have a picture of you. So it's not like you were innocent that day. You got poor Stephen O'Neill sent off. He was already on a yellow. So we have that picture here. So here you are wrestling with poor Stevie, and I think putting him onto the ground.
I was trying to lift him up there. Huh?
So my information.
What is Stevie doing?
Just the goalie Copeland gets involved even round, didn't he?
That was a separate row.
Well, that was an earlier one, wasn't it?
No, it was later on.
Later on again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, about 10 minutes later, another row kicked off, off the ball. And I think Stephen O'Neill hit one of our lads a dig and it just kicked off and he ended up getting a red card. But
right.
I was obviously marking him that day, so I was definitely glad to see the back of a little, player of the year.
A little birdie told me, Alan Brogan, that you knew Stephen O'Neill was on a yellow card, so you were happy to get in a wrestling fight with him and both of you get yellows, but his second one was a yellow, or was a red, obviously.
Yeah, we actually went for a ball, I think, early in the first half and it spilled away and we fell on the ground and as he was running off, I ankle-tapped him. And he did a bit of a tumble, and then he ran at me, and the linesman obviously only saw him running at me, and he got a yellow card. But obviously, when a fella's on a yellow card early enough, you know that if you get in a bit of a row, two more yellows each, and you know he'd be gone, and I'd be still on the pitch. So
yeah,
it's pretty straightforward.
It's pretty straightforward. It's logic. It's basic logic. We've been doing it for years. Pillar, like there's so much action, it's hard to know what to even concentrate on in this. So much happened. But one of the best parts was when I was reading up about it, was that you were doing your interview after with Jerk Hanning and you got hit with a 7-Up bottle.
That's 7-Up, is it?
Classic. It's like Cesc Fabregas with Alex Ferguson and the pizza.
There was a lot of booing, I don't know, I presume it was for Paddy Russell when the teams were going off afterwards. I think it was the only time we bet Tyrone Jordan my tenner. So we're coming off the pitch. So there's after been 14 players booked, 4 players sent off, 3 good rows, and Paddy Russell has sworn never to referee again. So Jerry Canning's looking for an interview for the Sunday game that night. So I'm coming back out on the pitch. So I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out, and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out. And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you Free State bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here." So this comment was so good, I looked around. And as I looked around, I got this bottle, plastic bottle, half full of 7-Up was coming tumbling down. Smacked me. Nose is big enough and crooked enough, but smacked me right in the bridge of the nose and gave me a little cut here. And sure, Jerry Canning was like, "Jesus, oh, quick, get him wiped the blood off him and then do the interview." So it was an unusual end to the game, that's all I'll say.
So where did you find the 7-Up bottle, Muggsy? What's your dressing room like afterwards? I suppose you're all hyped up and, like, I mean, because the crowd, Pitter's been nice to his own team there. The crowd booed Paddy Russell off and booed the Dublin team off because that, you know, is obviously the majority of support was the from
no,
Tyrone.
No, look, Brian will tell you himself. Mickey got us to do another deck of the Rosie.
So basically, he prayed for Dublin.
prayed for forgiveness.
Prayed for no suspension.
Prayed that someday Dublin might win in All Ireland or something like that. But it's hard to know, Pillar.
Yeah, no, and just on that, like in terms of what goes on in dressing rooms or whatever, but the dressing rooms are quite small. So I was doing my final team talk, and the 15 starting players around me, and we're in the shower area. And just as I'm finishing up, one of my backroom team just pushed me out of the way and said, "And remember everything fucking Pillar said, and when the row kicks off, see our man," they threw a picture of a player, "he's to get fucking thumped by everyone."
Are you serious? For which, the next one?
No, that was before the game.
Before the game, right. Come on, tell us who it was.
Well, I won't tell you what one of my backroom
people
was.
No, tell us who the player was. Ricey.
Well, it wasn't Connor, because he wasn't playing. You weren't... No, you were a peacemaker in the long coat. You didn't pick that out. he was like the headmaster in the yard. "Get back there, lads. Relax. Relax. In the middle of the row."
That'll be Ricey.
Ricey, yeah.
That'll be.
See, if he's in our dressing room, he'd feel the same.
Right, so 9 of you are up for suspension then. This is maybe, like, it's such a dramatic kind of thing that this is almost the icing of the cake. So there's 9 up for suspension. 5 from Dublin, 4 from Tyrone, which seems a fair enough kind of split from what happened. And everyone got off. Yeah. It's a classic. So Alan was telling me you actually met each other, because Mooksy, you were up. You met each other coming out of Croke Park. You were coming out as Dublin were going in.
No, it was the other way about.
The other way around.
They were coming laughing. And we were like, "What the fuck's going on here?" Like, they, you know, maybe they got off. And I was like, you know, as if a high five, you know, one of them is there, like, you know. We got off, so...
We get off as well. And
how did you get off? Was it technicality?
Technicality. Yeah.
What was it? What could it have been?
And that was before the DRA were around.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I can't remember what it was, but I remember Paul Doerr represented us, and he's very good.
Right.
And we had Aaron Shearer, and he's very good.
So after that, the DRA was set up, basically.
Yeah,
after
I remember getting in. No, but I remember getting in, and we had our separate hearings, and he started going on about, you know, this man has, you know, went to, like, sick children and, you know, brought his
charity events
and this man's went stop to primary story. Schools and he's been coaching and stuff, and I was going, holy fuck, am I doing the half of this?
Jesus Christ. Who is he happy?
He's going, I have to get here like a baby, see. So I think he made did the same for everybody, like, you know, read like a sort of piece on everybody, and
right.
I think it washed.
Yeah, it definitely worked.
But Willie, just an add-on, so we get on the team bus afterwards and we're just pulling out of the park, and next thing, Davy Billings, God be good to him, was one of my selectors, and Davy's phone ring, and he says, Pillar, somebody wants you on the phone. So I said, yeah. So this prominent GA official from Munster, Pillar, just from all down south, we just want to say that's a great victory for you today, and congratulations and well done. About time manners was put on them fellas. And I said, thanks very much. I won't mention his name now. I said, thanks very much. And I hand the phone back to Davy. And Davy, that was it. I said, Davy, does he know what went on? He says, he hasn't a fucking clue. And when we met that day to go to the match, the vice chairman of Dublin at the time, who remained nameless, met us in Keighleysbury.
Yeah.
We had a pre-match meal in there.
Inside the airport, yeah.
And he was all excited. He'd never been on the team bus going. He was more a hurling man than a football man. He was sitting in the front of the bus as happy as this great jolly up, heading up to. And next thing, the match happened. And a bit of a schmozzle. And when we got on the team bus, everyone was saying, where? He was gone. He disowned us. He got in the car and went straight away. He knew the shit that was coming.
Come here, before we finish up on this, now that you mentioned Ricey, there was a moment between you and him because you obviously played the following year in the league in the floodlit game in Croke Park. So this was the start of that. And was he sent off and you had an altercation as you were walking off, or was it at half time?
Well, I'd have to laugh because, look, all Ireland champions, they're always going to be rolled out for a big game. You know, 2006 rolled out, first league game. They bring Dublin up thinking, you know, they might get a bit of a good game or highlight the National League.
High profile
game, right? The following year, after the Battle of Omagh and all that went on, Tyrone aren't All-Ireland champions. We're not All-Ireland champions. The first game in 2007 league is the first floodlit game ever in Croke Park. So a big media get behind it. 82,000 people attend this game, and it's Dublin-Tyrone. And again, we were all out to try and win this game. We put a huge effort in, and Tyrone pipped us 10-9 that day. But Ricey was sent off in that game. So he's coming down by the Dublin dugout, and I'm standing up. And I compliment him being such a good player. And he said to me, you're nearly a very good manager. He says, you probably need to believe in God a bit more. And, and I end up getting a suspension out of it.
My God.
Yeah. So these fellas in Croke Park...
You must have changed your solicitor there, did you?
They can lip read as well as everything else.
But Bugsy, you must have enjoyed playing against Dublin because they were great. They were great games, and you did have the upper hand on Dublin. And like I said, it's the other way around now with Tyrone and Dublin. But like Dublin, when you're able to beat them in Croke Park, must be a lovely feeling.
It's probably gone back from '95, being a lad, you know, behind the nets and, you know, kind of flicking it up or whatever, either touch it on the ground or not. And it's always kind of stuck on this Tyrone supporters, and I'm a beat, and you know. You're always brought up, I suppose, playing the same colours as them back home here in Cookstown and different things they got. But they're always the ones they were kind of my kind of second team. I loved the Hull 16. I loved the way they went on about themselves. And I loved some of the players that played early days. And I was glad to get a run out against them. And I seemed to rise to the occasion in Croke Park and them sort of games. I loved the big stage, you know.
Yeah. And why do you think, Barry, you didn't get over the line in those days? Like, because you were very close to those teams. But, like, I suppose when you think about it, Tyrone or Matt Kerry, they'd be beating Dublin team now, and Dublin would be... Like, there'd be much closer games, you know.
And don't mention the manager, Barry.
I definitely... That Tyrone team and the Kerry team of that area, like, I mean, they'd hold their own in any
in a year, going back the last 50, 60 years. You know, I think we were a bit unfortunate that we tended to play Tyrone on their really good years.
On their year off,
their year back on.
We did
have a couple of off years that we didn't get to meet them, but, I mean, they're phenomenal matches. I think, you know, we had a very good team when we were probably, you know, second or third best in the country for a couple of years. We weren't quite good enough to win on All-Ireland. I think we maybe, Alan Brogan was our only marquee forward. We probably needed another forward, whereas the likes of Tyrone had Canavan, Muggsy, Brian McGuigan, you know, Stephen O'Neill, Brian Dewar, all lads who could do a lot of damage on any given day. We maybe didn't have that spread of it. And also, we were probably lacking a designated full-back. You know, between Paddy Christie retiring and Roy O'Carroll coming in 2010, you know, we had a lot of players playing full-back that maybe weren't natural full-backs. So those were probably the two reasons. But definitely look back on those games. Finally, not to say it was an eight quarter-final defeat. That was a really tough one. But in 2005, we were after having a couple of really tough years in Leinster. And then the drawn game and the replay were phenomenal matches. I mean, full houses, 82,500 people in August, you know, playing in front of that atmosphere. You know, not people got to do it.
The replay especially.
The replay.
Yeah. It was just, you could feel it coming, you know, in droves.
And probably more so than playing in an All-Ireland final, because you have a lot of neutrals at All-Ireland finals, you know, whereas in these games it was, you know, probably 70% Dublin, 30% Tyrone, but it was all supporters from each of the counties.
Yeah, no, maybe, yeah, that's probably it.
I'd love to see, obviously can't happen, but, like, I'd rate that Tyrone team so highly, and the Kerry team also that was around that was winning a couple of All-Irelands in between them, and this Dublin team now, like, you'd love to match off in a game, Tyrone at their best, Dublin at their best, and that Kerry team at their best, and I don't think there was better teams than them ever that I can remember in the GAA, like, so...
It would be great. We'll talk to Conor Gormley next. He thinks his team in 05 would beat the Dublin team now, so we'll have to ask him about that.
He fucking would, wouldn't he?
Right, listen, give it up for our first panel, Peter Caffrey, Owen Mulligan and Barry Cash. It's time for a second panel, and please give a huge welcome to Kevin Nolan, Brian McGuigan and Conor Gormley. Nice of you, Brian, to wear the Dublin colours. Yep. This is very, very... Conor, just quickly to clear up, if you have got the floor now and the mic, if you want to clear up any accusations that were kind of levelled at you.
Wasn't me. Ricey wasn't me.
You and Ricey were a bit of a double act, though, weren't you? Like, I mean, you were the torturers. Every team needs them, and Dublin have Philly McMahon, for example, now. So, like, you need those lads that don't really care about being seen as one of these fellas, and you and Ricey were those two kind of enforcers.
Well, maybe, I don't know.
The thing about it was, them boys, you see, whenever you play club football, they're exact same. That was the thing you had to admire about them. If I was marking him, he'd be the exact same as he played with the county, and it was the same whenever Ricey was there, and he'd give you a mouth, and mouthing whenever you're playing with the club. And, you know, there was one time I actually did have to go back and ask the wife, are you sleeping with Ricey?
I never went that low.
But that's a
kind of thing.
He seems so sure about this. Like. Kevin, you kind of came across Tyrone, the great Tyrone team, in 08 when you came onto the scene. Like, I mean, they blew you away when you thought you were going well at that year.
Yeah, it was my first year with the panel with Pillar, so I've a lot to thank him for. Made my debut against Wexford the previous game. Was taken off after 20 minutes after being booked against Red Barry, and he just used his experience. And, you know, it was a learning curve for me, but, like, sitting in the stand and sitting on the bench watching Tyrone that day, I'll never forget, it was a wet day, and they steamrolled us.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just a phenomenal team. And looking back at it now, they were all players that were at the peak of their game. And even as a team, people were talking about this intensity and tackling that they brought to the game. And, you know, every team then tried to mimic it. And, you know, as Conor was saying before, he thinks that the team back in 05 would put up to Dublin now. And, you know, it's a pity you can't see it, but it would be one hell of a game.
Yeah, I think I might have actually got that wrong, Conor. You said the 08 team. I think you said that the 08 team was the perfect balance. I thought your 05 team was just, like, star-studded, unbelievable team, but you thought the balance in 08 was better, did you?
I thought so. Maybe I just would. A bit of confidence after winning the previous, coming off to All-Irelands. I thought
probably just better, you know.
Yeah. But you would have kind of got that... the defensive system was starting to develop a little bit in 08.
I probably was a wee bit of experience from them years that we played, you know, and Bosa and Brian there up sort of front and Muggsy up front were really starting to show and really lead the thing, you know, and that's why I think them teams would cause Dublin a bit of ball now, because the forward line we had then, I think, would really push that Dublin team at the minute, you know. Yeah. Really, boys mentioned before, you had then you'd do her to come into that as well, like, and boys like that was brilliant. Marty Penner was going to be coming in, so I think the boys at that time would have really troubled this Dublin defensive thing at the minute, you know.
Yeah, no, I think they would. I'm glad you mentioned Tyrone forwards now, because Brian, Sean Kavanagh has made a big impression in his punditry career. We'll get on to that. We'll get on to that in a little while. But one of the things he said was that Tyrone have marquee forwards, they don't have the system to show them off. Now, for me, Tyrone have nowhere near the forwards of Tyrone 05. Like, I mean, that's out of the question. That was proper marquee forwards. But is the system holding forwards in Tyrone back a little bit?
I wouldn't go as far as that. Like, it wasn't this time last year before Tyrone was playing Dublin in the semi-final. Like Sean was talking about, the team last year was as good as the team in 05. So right. I wouldn't go as far as that. I do think that Mickey's playing a system that suits the players that he has. You know, in 2008, the one thing he did change, I think the 05 team was better, but in 08, you know, it was a started a wee bit more defensive with playing Joe McMahon at number 10 and bringing him back. That was the start of it. But, you know, in 05, like, Mickey never went to training and done any defensive stuff. It was all about trying to express yourself in the forward division. We had the forwards to do it at that time.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, is it almost surprising when he's telling you to go and express yourself then to what... Like, it doesn't seem that the forwards are expressed. I don't know. Like, it's just different forward play, right? Like, I mean, it's just a far cry from a forward back in 05, for example.
I do think the panel they have now, they have a lot of great forwards. And you go to club football, you see how great they are. But a lot of them, like in our time, the full forward line, you had Muggsy, Stevie and Peter. They're all dangerous forwards, but they're all so different. Whereas now you have the same type of player in the full forward line. So you can't really play three of them up at the minute.
Yeah. Tomás Corrigan was on the podcast recently, Kevin, and he said that growing up now, you shouldn't really be dreaming of playing corner forward because you might get three touches a half. He said it's all about playing wing back now. That's where you're on the ball. You don't have huge defensive duties because someone's going to cover for you, and you've licensed to go whenever, as long as you have the engine, you can go wherever you want. So, like, I mean, it's just completely changed in that almost the glamour positions are not in the corners anymore.
Oh, it is, yeah. Like, you look like Bernard Brogan, Stephen O'Neill, like, these corner forwards anymore, they're not getting the ball. And, you know, you can see now in Dublin's play, like, Paul Mannion, clubmate of mine, having to chase back and turning lads over in his own 21. So, like, those marquee forwards aren't there anymore because the ball isn't being kicked in. And the way it's, like, yes, Dublin do it as well, that they will bring 40 and 50 men behind the ball at times as well. So, you know, it's just they're going with the times and they're dominating at the minute.
Yeah. What's the, like, is there a solution to this then, Conor? Like, I mean, surely we should be protecting corner forwards because let's be honest, they are the, all right. sorry. Brian, surely we should be... Talk about asking the wrong person that. No, but you get my point. Like, I mean, the most skillful players are usually the forwards and they don't seem to have the same kind of, maybe, is it protection? The game seems to be all based around how you can defend, but are forwards being rewarded for winning a good ball?
Yeah, well, I was listening to your podcast on Monday, I think it was, and you were talking about the rule changes and maybe one you could bring in is giving a reward to somebody that gets the ball from a kick pass outside the 45 inside the 21.
Yeah.
And I would actually agree with that because now you get a lot of boys dropping back and they don't really go man for man. Whereas if they knew they were going to get rewarded inside the 21, then there would be a lot of man for man marking. They might get a bit more width in the forward line. But I do agree that there should be changes. But the thing is, there would have to be five or six different rule changes and they're never going to do that in one year.
Yeah, one to complement the other. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about Stephen O'Neill's job in there, lads. What's he... Because, again, it's on the same point that the forward line Stephen O'Neill would have played in was a completely different forward line to what's there now. Like, I mean, how can he coach a forward line that has only two forwards there?
Or even one, maybe, at some
case. When they're gone to two, they've really kind of pushed it on this year.
Developed now to two forwards inside. I sort of know what his role really is. Mickey's the boss, I would imagine. Like, he called the shots and what way the team would play. I suppose there's been a bit more development now with Richie Donnelly in there. They seem to be kicking a bit more ball into him. You know, he's been... they started off, maybe they weren't really using him as much, but this last couple of games they really are getting ball in them. So you can see Stevie's impact a bit more management maybe of the game, I think. On the forward line, they're more controlled in what they're doing. They aren't maybe rushing things maybe that they did last year and getting turned over a lot, especially against Dublin in the semi-final last year. So it's a wee bit more controlled play, and I think Stevie was bringing that, a bit more composure on their play and getting the runners coming in, like some Matty Donnelly coming in, steaming through and stuff like that. Cathal McShane coming steaming through, maybe off Richie. So there's, I think that's impact of Stevie's having a bit more composure and a bit more thinking of what's happening in the forward division, I think.
Okay, I suppose he'll be taking credit for the huge scores. Like, I mean, what is it in the last three games? Is something outrageous?
No, some scores. Like, it's good to see, but the ultimate test will come now Saturday. Like, if can they do that against the Dubs? Can these boys really show what they're capable of doing against the Dublin team?
Yeah.
Even against Donegal too. Like, after that, can they do it against them two teams?
The fairness to them, were racking up big scores last year too. Like, you know,
before
the Dublin game, the Armagh game, like, they racked up a big score that day. And the problem was with the Dublin match the next day was that Dublin got the early goal and Tyrone really have to be in front. That's against the likes of Dublin.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's almost like if Tyrone concede an early goal, it's like, shit, there's panic throughout the team.
Yeah. I played in a National League match up there in 2014 and we set out our stall that we were going to go at them right from the start, and James McCarthy, I think, got a goal in the first minute. We scored 3-4 in the first half. Now, in the second half, we only won the game by a point in the end, but up in Healy Park, you know, we went for the juggler straight away, and I think that's what Dublin do from the start. You know, things that would be said is, you know, it's man on man at the very start with the balls thrown up. So if Dublin win, they're attacking a defence that is only 6-on-6.
You have a chance in the two throw-ins.
Exactly, yeah.
And you could imagine that if Dublin, the way they played last week against Donegal when they were winning, if they get in the same situation against Tyrone now, they'll sit back again and invite Tyrone on them.
It could be another battle of Omagh.
What's the problem with Omagh? Like, it's not a fortress. Everyone's talking about that. And, like, I mean, was that in your time? Like, would you have been confident in Omagh?
A few boys didn't like playing against Omagh. Like, I personally didn't mind. Didn't bother me really at all. So we played a lot of club games there and played against Omagh and club championships. But a few of the boys maybe didn't.
I think maybe a lot of teams would train on their home patch, but we never really trained in Omagh.
Oh, you wouldn't. You train in Centre of Excellence, so you're not training in Omagh.
At that time, would have trained in all our club grounds, you know, maybe Clahar and maybe Arbo a few nights, but wouldn't really get trained in actual Healy Park, you know, very, very limited.
So maybe that's a straight. They're obviously very protective. They wouldn't let Dublin warm up in it back in the States.
But
you'd imagine, like, when the championship used to start with Laois, we'd always train in a Moore Park, you know, during the championship. But, like, it's not like we'd play there, but at least. Yeah.
We made it maybe the Tuesday night before, say the game was on Sunday, we made it maybe the Tuesday night to run it or something like that, or Thursday night.
Yeah.
Been all really.
I hear they're shortening the pitch and narrowing the pitch.
No, not today there. Well, make that nice and close.
I would say this could be just, it could be just.
I think further out happens more, it'll be further to go to the gate then.
But that's it, because we actually had a laugh on the hurling show. Damien Hayes always talks about a game down in Port Laois where he says, geez, that Moore Park is a terrible tight pitch. And I was listening going, Moore Park's one of the biggest pitches in the country because Cheddar narrowed it in to play Galway. So, like, Tyrone will do that, will they?
I think a tighter pitch will probably...
Would suit Tyrone, obviously.
I imagine, like, because, you know, Dublin played a lot of width last year in Croke Park.
They did. They had the lads posted on the corner. So this is it. Tyrone pitch is going to be tiny. Is that something you've ever come across, Kevin?
No, but expect the unexpected coming up here. You never know what you get.
I was reading a thing when we were talking about Stephen O'Neill about him and you being on a string. Now, I want you to explain this to me, because that was actually new to me when I'd heard about this. And I was like, Jesus, first of all, I was saying, if Stevie has to follow everywhere McGuigan goes, he's doing a lot of
trips.
But so Stevie used to shadow your movement on the field. So when you'd get the ball, he would be in striking distance of a pass from you.
I don't think it was something really deliberate or that everybody knew about, but it seemed like somebody wrote an article one time that no five that was actually happening. But it was more that we would have grew up in the same teams as minors and under 20s, the same as Muggsy, he was in the same team too. But my natural instinct was, when I got the ball, you'd be looking for the middle man and full forward. And Stevie always was that man when I was growing up, and Mickey was the manager. So I think it was just to have central men at that time, as a link man, and always look Stevie as the first option. If it wasn't on, then there was somebody else. But you know, I think it was a Cavan player, Hannan, maybe made.
It was him, yeah.
Think it was him. I actually wrote an article about it. So
Do you think he was reading too much into it then?
I think he was.
Over.
Well, look, whenever we're going up, you had quality players inside. So whether it was Stevie, Muggsy, or Canavan, it didn't matter. You put the ball in there, they were going to get
it. I think that's it. You were all such natural players that it's easy to play in with players that know. You know what I mean? If you're turning around and you're looking in and Muggsy breaks away from the ball, you can hit him. They know where you just know how to play together. It doesn't need a huge amount necessarily.
No, and the one thing about those three men was, you know, you have to marry them because they would maybe make three or four different runs. Like, it wasn't one run and then stop. It was one run, get back in the position, make an hour run. They were just relentless and looking the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about Stephen O'Neill. He's got some influence. What's Horst Devlin's role in there? He's like the assistant manager. Does he coach at all, or what does he do?
You had a bit of a run on him too, didn't you?
I did. I did have a run. It's funny that you mentioned that, because we have a picture here. This is basically a picture of Horst Devlin gently putting his arm around me, asking me, am I okay?
After two knees.
After doing the river dance on my leg when I was lying on the ground. But, like, I mean, what does he do in there? Like, no, I mean, he's more of a...
He's a brilliant motivator. Like, even whenever we were playing, like, that was the one thing about him. He was great in the changing rooms. And he was like a Mickey Hart in there. And, you know, the thing about it was that struck out a bit with me was in 2005, he got took off the first game against Dublin because Alan Brogan had given tough a toast that day. I think you went to centre-half back then. But he was took off that day and you knew he was never going to get back on because he lacked pace. The position he played growing up with Mickey, with minors and under-21s in the first couple of years as seniors was sweeper. But everybody was catching on to that time. But when he was dropped that time, he knew he was never going to get back on, but he never stopped motivating people.
Right.
Which was admirable of him because he could have sat back there and huffed.
So there's no ego there,
no,
really.
It was great. Like, and him and Mickey always had a great relationship and you knew he was destined to be in the line with somebody.
Right, okay. So they seem to have a good relationship there anyways, don't they? Like,
the best of it is they're chalk and cheese, like.
I would be high.
Mickey's teetotaler. Gavin's not. There's a few all things I can say.
Look, they're just chalk and cheese, okay? You can... Kevin, I want to talk to you about Jim Gavin. And, like, I mean, you're a man of the match in the All-Ireland Final in 2011. For me, looking from the outside, he didn't really give you much of a chance. And there's a couple of others that he didn't give much of a chance to. And I'm just wondering, have you any kind of insight into why that was or any conversations? Because how can you go from having the year you had in 11 to being kind of like almost a forgotten about man with him?
Well, for myself, I probably had a better year in 2012 myself, but at the end of 2011, I was diagnosed with diabetes. So when Jim had come in, he actually told me to take a break at the start of the season because I'd been through 2 years of the illness. And he said to come back around the middle to the end of the O'Byrne Cup. And so by that time, there was lads in positions. And the start of 2013, his start. He basically had, you know, not a rule, but lads who were doing well in the jersey kept it there, and it was up to the rest of us to push on. And we were flying at the time. There was new lads into the panel. After the disappointing loss to Mayo the previous year, he gave lads a bit of a chance, and they took it. And sure, it was coming up, like, Jack McCaffrey was in there, number seven.
Yeah.
Jer Brennan and James, like, the half-back line that I would have been playing with, that were flying. And, you know, look at James now, he's still flying any position he could play. But for myself, it was just trying to get a chance, and unfortunately, with different things, you know, I just put it down to I wasn't 100%. And with Jim, if you're not 100%, you know, there's other lads to step in. And we've all said it before, and even chatting to lads before, the competition in the squad is just immense. That if you're not at the right pace, there's other lads there to step in.
Yeah. So did you feel you never got back to your level after diabetes thing, 11 and 12? And
well, I got in 2014 for some of the National League. Towards the end of it, we went up. I started the game, as I said, in 2014 against Tyrone. Did well enough and kept the position for a few matches. And then leading into the first championship game, had to come off in an A versus B match. And then struggled to get back in for that game. Following game, I came on. I played against Wexford, but it just wasn't 100% right. Now, unfortunately, I tried to stay as positive as I can, but yes, there was issues that wasn't able to compete at the 100% level.
Right. Okay. What's he like to deal with? Is he fair?
He'd sort of be standoff with players. Like, lads would find it hard to read him, and he'd maybe purposely he doesn't get involved in the conversation. He'd have a, you know, a quick chat with you, but you never really get the full sense of Jim. And,
right.
You know, he sort of stands on the outside, maybe because the rootlessness in him that, you know, he might find it easier dropping lads or, you know, telling lads they aren't starting. Because I don't think there's one game he's actually selected the starting 15 that has been named during the week that has started the championship game. So, you know, in-house changes happen quite regularly. And, you know, I think it's just him. I've had him at an under 21 level, and he was the same. He's sort of army, sort of regimental stuff.
He's very standoffish, I've heard. And maybe Kevin makes a good point there. If you're going to be as ruthless as he is, might be hard to tell some lads that you're very close to that. You know what I mean? It's a difficult balance. Obviously, Mickey would have been more of a closer man manager and more of a father figure to you. Every manager is different, like every player, I suppose, Brian.
I think it's easy for Jim Gavin to be ruthless because he has a strong panel there.
Yeah, a bit like Brian Cody with Kilkenny when he had loads of lads.
You know, like whenever Dermot Connolly, they don't seem to be... Like, if he was with Tyrone, you'd be chasing him, trying to get him back again. But it's next man in, somebody else is going to take his place.
Yeah. It's a nice position to be in, I suppose.
Definitely. I had a panel, you know, but that's what they have at the minute, and that's, everybody has to get to that level now, and get likes of Tyrone have to get to that level where their boys are coming off the bench making an impact, or likes of Kevin McMenamin as well coming on, and every time he comes on, he does someone brilliant, like, or scores a goal. So that's what Tyrone have to get boys to come on and really make an impact. So Ronan O'Neill is doing that a wee bit there, and different boys are doing, but it's really getting up to that high level to make an impact as it come on.
Ronan O'Neill was an interesting one in that he was a little bit petulant to O'Neill when he was taken off. It was against Monaghan. And in fairness, he never did get a ball. Now, corner forwards are always sacrificed when things aren't going well. But in fairness to Mickey, he didn't hold it against him, did he? Ronan got back in.
No, well, the thing about it is whenever you're winning, then everybody buys into it. But whenever you're losing, like, nobody will. And I think it was at a bad time that time because Sean had just come out the week before it and slated Mickey a wee bit. And then the defeat, they were obviously going to get beat by Monaghan when he was been took off, and it was easy for Ronan to make a comment. But he seems to have bought in now. He's accepted that he's going to make an impact coming on. He has done that this past few matches.
Yeah. Come here, so talk to us about Sean Kavanagh to finish up here before we get predictions. Like, I mean, what's your take on his punditry? Like, there's two ways I look at this. Like, I mean, I think he's great as a pundit. I think that if you want credibility as a pundit, you have to be as critical of your own county as others, or else people are just, you know, I think there's too much of Sunday game analysts playing games about their own county and defending them when they shouldn't be.
Brian's going to give out a bit of him because he took his spot on RTE. Like, he's going to say shite. Like.
Come on,
go ahead, Brian.
No. He tries to be as honest as he can, but it's very hard to slate your own. And like, well, what's his thinking of Mickey Hart now?
Yeah,
you know, is Mickey playing the right road? And nothing's changed. So, like, I'm sure he gives Tyrone every chance to beat Dublin on Saturday night.
Yeah. What's your take, Conor? Like, do you think it's fair enough, or do you think you have to be... There's some things you just don't say about a manager.
I think that's things you just don't say. I think, especially with Sean being captain the last number of years and just retired, and especially to the time it came out just before the championship, I think it was bad ill-timing. But it looks like Sean wants to sell the book as well. Like, there's a lot of book coming out he wants to...
And Colley been there too, like, it made it awkward.
It's difficult enough. Yeah, yeah, difficult decision, but... That's what he wants to say, and whatever suits him, I suppose. But
yeah.
But a lot of players in that era, like a lot of players in those teams, came out in support of Mickey and all. You know, the show is if, you know, Sean, shut the fuck up for a while. You know, don't you know, and it's great to see that. You know, even after lads have finished playing with teams, that there's still that bond and that togetherness, which is, you know, it is great to see.
Yeah. Well, Gavin Devlin did make a good point in that. Why did you never say it when you're in there? Mm-hmm. Would players be afraid to maybe suggest something to Mickey? Would it be like terrifying? Would it be terrifying to say Mickey?
Oh, he'd been open enough. Mickey would be open enough. Like, we would have chatted to him about different things. He would have maybe defenders meetings. We would have mentioned things to him, or group meetings. Like, he would have been open. But maybe small group meetings where we put stuff down on pen and paper, and he would have took it away and come back then with stuff. Like, he would have been fairly open, you know. But I'd imagine Sean, I don't know. Maybe did say someone. Mickey didn't take it on board. I don't know what the situation was there, but Mickey would have been fairly open enough to any suggestions. Like, definitely would have been.
We would have team meetings, and if you disagreed with Mickey, you could be sure that meeting would have went on and on and on until you agreed with Mickey.
it'd be like the time you drink, you had the flu, maybe a cold or something, you're dying at home, and you'd ring Mickey and say, "Oh, Mickey, and I can't make it in, right, okay. oh, just we're picking teams here, and oh, no, not make it, right. Oh, that's okay. Sure, sure, not be there. Oh, right, I'll be there. You go to turn, you'd be dying, like, you know, the flu or whatever. But it just, as Brian said, didn't really turn you around to his way of thinking. But I always thought him, if I went to him personally, even he'd been open enough and would have told you straight down the line how it would have been.
Right, Muggsy was telling a story about you'd be talking about drink bans with Mickey. So Mickey'd say, look, do whatever you do, you self police it, put your own drink ban. So you come back and say, right, we'll have 2 pints after match, Mickey. And then Mickey go, are you sure you want those? And before you know it, you have a month ban put on yourself.
That was one thing about him. He never put a drink ban on that.
Really?
No, I never did.
And even now, do they have one? Or
I don't know the way it works, no.
Right.
At that time, there definitely was no drink bans on.
It didn't bother me, you know. I was helping off. I don't drink any.
It was more lawless back then anyways. But, right, we'll finish up with predictions here, lads. How do you see it going, Conor? I'll start with you.
It's going to be cagey, I think, first of all.
You don't say.
Sort of two teams, sort of similar styles. You want to say defensive and all that. I think the first half's going to be low scoring, possibly. I think the start of second half, that's sort of third quarter, if you want to say. That's really when Dublin seemed to push on and get big scores and really hit that sort of target of getting high scores in that area. So I think that's Tyrone have to be someone they have to work on. I think even last year's game, Tyrone had 3 or 4 chances at the start of the second half and had it took them. Maybe it could have been a different outcome. Well, not maybe, I think Dublin's still going to win, but it could have pushed them even more. So I would hope Tyrone would really push them as hard as they can. Really, if they happen to get beat by 2 or 3 points, would be a great result. But I think maybe it could go a wee bit closer. But as long as they really push Dublin to the pin of the collar, I think a lot of Tyrone people would be very happy and improve on last year's performance against the Dubs.
Yeah.
So hoping a really tight game and maybe a wee 1 point victory would be nice.
Maybe the tight pitch might work in your favour. The thing you'd worry about from a Tyrone point of view, Brian, is that they have such a brilliant running game, and that's like, I know they're kicking it in more, but it was nearly in the second half when the game was over, you saw them kicking it in a lot. They almost trust their running game, but Dublin have just as good a running game, if not better, and they're bigger, stronger men. So
I think the kickouts are going to be key, especially the Dublin kickouts. I don't agree with it, but the way Tyrone play, I think they should concede the kickout.
Yeah.
Because if they push 6 forwards up, and next thing, Dublin very good middle of the field with Fenton, and even when the second phase ball, the breaking ball, they're good at it. So if they win it there, it's very hard for the 6 forwards, or for at least 5, to get back and then try and work on the counter attack and try and push forward again. So I think they'll be better conceding the kickouts.
Yeah. Even they should concede them all from play. If there's a free, they might have a chance. But from play, trying to rush up and rush back, it's hard. Because Cluxton, I think against Donegal, when Donegal were trying to have press up, he had 23 or 25 kickouts or something, success rate. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah, and he's the best in the business at it. And there's no set movements. It's just lads are moving freely and he'll pick them out. He'll put into the space for them. And, you know, I think, you know, we talk about pushing up or kicking or stepping back. I think if you do have a free and you're ready to move the rest of the team up, that's the only time to do it.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not many teams have been able to counteract the Dublin kick-out.
The rest of the time, just maybe conceded, like you were saying. Right, so Dublin are 1-3, according to Paddy Power. Tyrone are 3-1. The handicap is -4. Conor, what are you going? Tyrone +4, based on what you said?
Well, maybe 4, but go with Tyrone now.
Okay.
2.
Okay, right.
Go 2.
I think Dublin by 3 or 4.
Dublin by 3 or 4, okay.
I go a bit more. Dublin by 6 or 7, yeah.
Dublin by 6 or 7. That kind of slipped below the radar. Say that a little bit louder.
Dublin by about 6 or 7. The reason is, I would have felt last year Tyrone would have put it up to Dublin. Maybe Conor Callan came in under the radar and, you know, the first couple of minutes he scored a goal. It was 1-2 or 1-3 to no score. And I think this year, especially in the last game, Conor Callan, Kieran Kilkenny, Paul Mannion had poor enough games and I can't see them having a bad day again. And I think for teams to beat Dublin, this Dublin team anyway, they have to get a bit of luck. I think Donegal had it last week, but then Dublin were in a position to control the game. And I think if Dublin get into that position again, they could do something similar, because all Jim wants is the 2 points.
Yeah, exactly. That's the process.
That's exactly is the process. That's
one game as it comes. Right, listen, give it up for a second panel. Kevin Nolan, Brian McGuigan and Conor Gormley. That's all we have time for 2 Facebook Live sections. So good luck to everyone on Facebook. Thanks very much to our sponsor, Paddy Power. And we're going to continue on here with a quiz, which will be on the podcast. So it's Dublin versus Tyrone. So you don't want to miss that. Good luck. All right, so this is the GAR quiz. That's it, the quiz. Doesn't sound great when you just call it the quiz. So it's Tyrone versus Dublin. Now, an interesting thing about this quiz. is we've done a lot of these quizzes, and the team that wins, their team has always won that weekend. I don't know how, it's just been a weird kind of way it's worked out. So there's a lot riding on this, lads. There's a lot riding on it. Your whole county's fortunes are riding on it. And the winners of the quiz get a pair of Paddy Power lucky boxer shorts. Pillar, we got extra large for you there. All right. So, round one is how many All-Stars does he have round? Right? So, question one to team one, and that's Dublin. So, how many All-Stars has Sean Cavanagh? You can confer. Kevin, you can
said
be
five,
correct. Well done. Okay. 1-0 to Dublin. You can go captain. You're the only one mic'd up, right? So, right, question one to team two, which is Tyrone. How many All-Stars has Dear McConnelly?
Two.
Connor, well done. You didn't even need to confer. Well, we know who the captain over there is. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Okay, question two for team one. How many All-Stars has Michael Donnellan? The Dubs are really conferring on this.
Two.
Three. Okay. So still one all. Question two to team two. How many All-Stars has Pádraig Joyce?
Connor's going with four.
Going with four. Three.
Oh, only three.
All right, so it's still one all. So it's very, very close. So question three to team one. There's two chances of two points here. So who is more All-Stars, Mark O'Shea or Dar O'Shea? And if you can give us either of their number of All-Stars, you get an extra point. Right, lads, I'm going to have to push you for an answer there.
Dara.
Dara has more, and how many do both of them have?
Five.
Dara's five. How many in Mark?
Three.
Okay, so Dara has more and Mark has three. Dara has four, so you get 2 points there. Well done. There was a lot of conferring there. Question three for team two. Who is more All-Stars, Bernard or Alan Brogan? And how many have they for an extra point? Strangely enjoyable, this All-Stars.
Bernard with three, and Alan with two.
So you have Bernard with more All-Stars, so you get 1 point. Bernard has four, Alan has three. Okay, so Dublin are a point up going into round two. Round two is the what club does he play for round? Okay, so question one to team one, which is Dublin. What club does Conor Gormley play for?
Pat's going with Carrickmore.
Well done. Well done, Barry. Well done. Well done, Barry. It actually, when I had to Google that myself, I wasn't sure.
Shaking his head, we heard us,
no? All right, very impressive from Dublin. Right, question one to team two. What club does Kevin Nolan play for?
So you said Borough, yeah?
Pardon?
I thought you were going to say Borough.
No, you probably know that straight away.
Kilmacud?
Yes, okay. Right, so that's 1-1 in this round. So Dublin still 1-1. Question two for team one, which is Dublin. What club does Tiernan McCann play for? You're right on that one. It's a weird name.
I don't, it's not, I was thinking.
You want to pass on that one?
We're not going to
pass that one over. Right, so it's Killyclocher. They're a recent county champions, aren't they? Question two to team two. What club does Brian Howard play for?
Oh, fuck. Is he teammates or somebody?
Bugsy wants to know who's Brian Howard.
Raheny, well done. Yes. All right, so we're all square. We're all square. Tyrone have tied it up. Right, so question three to team one, which is Dublin. What club does Andy Moran play for? Ballinadreen, okay, well done. Question three for team two. What club does Daniel Flynn play for?
Oh, Jesus, club. No, is it? Not too sure. Oh, I can read it.
Johnstown.
Very good, very good. Johnstown Bridge. Very impressive. Yeah. All right, so it's all level going into round three, lads. This is Squeaky Bum Town, and we know the winners on Saturday is always determined from this quiz. I'm telling the truth on that one. Right, so you have 20 seconds to name as many of this All-Ireland winning team as you can. Right, so first up is Team 1. So we've 20 seconds on the clock, Conan. I'll count it. So, right. In 5 seconds, I want you to name as many of this team. Yeah. Donegal, 2012. Go.
Carl Lacey, Michael Murphy, Colin McFadden, Pat McBrady,
Kavanagh,
Neil Gallagher,
Mark McHugh,
Frank McGlynn,
Paul Durkin,
Harry McGrath, Neil Gallagher, Neil McGee,
Eamon McGee,
Rory Kavanagh.
Right, Kavanagh, that's time up. How many is that, Conan?
14.
I think we're about 12, maybe, is it?
I was in Kavanagh before.
I'm actually Kavanagh 3 times.
No. I did say Kavanagh twice. Now, okay. Well, wait a minute. I don't think they got 14 here because you didn't say Ryan Bradley, you didn't say Leo McLoon. You didn't say Anthony Thompson. You didn't say Anthony Thompson, so I'm giving him 12. This fella. Okay, I'm giving you 12. There was 3 off that team that you didn't get. Is that fair enough?
Yeah,
everyone else, I think you got. All right, so you have to get 13 to beat it, lads.
Liverpool team.
Drone team.
Okay. Okay.
Liverpool.
All right, so here we go. You've got 10 seconds before we start. So we want you to name as many of the All-Ireland winning team. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Dublin 2011.
Phil McCund.
Stephen Clarkson.
Brogans.
Two Brogans. Kevin Nolan.
Kieran Whelan.
Christy. Christopher.
Brian Cullen.
Paul Flynn.
Cam McManaman.
All right, you're out of time, lads. That's terrible. That's absolutely terrible. It's not as easy as it looks, lads, is it? So I think he got about 6 there. Kieran Whelan had retired. Oh. And as had Paddy Christie. Nice input there, Muggsy. So that's it. Sorry, everyone, but a Dublin win it.
Hello.
Congratulations. Right, listen, that's all we've time for on the podcast. We'll be back. Best of luck to both teams on Saturday night. And we'll be back on Monday with the usual podcast. We'll talk to you then. Thanks very much, Carrickmore.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.